and looking at some practical lessons that we can learn from their lives. And the day before Sharon went back, she and I were discussing what characters to study in the next class, and she said that she wanted me to put some material together on Joseph, and she said that there was one particular aspect of the life of Joseph that had some particular significance and meaning in her life as she went back to China. And so I put some things together, and that next Skype class that we had after she went back, we covered that material, and that's what I want to do with you this morning. And when we get to that part of the study that has particular significance to Sharon, as she told me that it did, then we'll discuss that. Got a message this morning from one of the young ladies that has been in the class, who is an English speaker, and she has missed the last couple of classes, and she texted me to apologize for missing the class, like I was going to punish her or something, I don't know. But anyway, I appreciated the attitude that she had missed the class and she was apologizing for it, and she wants to make the classes up. And so, since she's an English speaker, that's not going to be difficult to do, working with her. But anyway, that's just a brief update on that. And then when we get to the point in the lesson about Sharon, I've got some things I want to share with you about her as well. Okay, here are a couple of passages from the book of Genesis having to do with Joseph. We meet Joseph when he is 17 years old. Just a very, very young man. And by the time he gets to be 30 years old, in Genesis chapter 41, 13 years have gone by, and a lot of things have happened in the life of Joseph. And some very significant things have happened in his life, and some of those we'll talk about this morning, because this is where we get the practical lessons, things that we can learn practically from the life of Joseph. Now, as a way of either reminding ourselves about Joseph or introducing, because there is possible that we have people here who are not familiar with Joseph, let's just go back, and this will be a very, very brief, very quick, way too superficial probably, look at the life of Joseph, but we'll go through in about 2 minutes, 2 or 3 minutes, and give you some things that will bring you kind of up to speed about Joseph and his life. Joseph was the favorite son out of the 12 sons that Jacob or Israel had, and his brothers hated him because of this. And this is where we're introduced to Joseph here in Genesis chapter 37. His brothers, because of their jealousy, because of the way they knew their father felt and the dreams that Joseph was having in which he saw himself as being above them, his brothers sold him into slavery. And they told their father that a wild animal had killed him. These people to whom the brothers sold Joseph eventually took him down into Egypt. And this is how Joseph gets into the country of Egypt. Joseph, once he's in Egypt, and remember now, he's about 17 or so at this time, Joseph begins to work for a man named Potiphar. And Potiphar was an Egyptian army officer, someone that had some rank among the Egyptian people. Potiphar's wife had tried to seduce Joseph sexually. Joseph was working in Potiphar's house. He was in charge. Joseph was in Potiphar's house, working there in charge of everything, and continually, repeatedly, Potiphar's wife tried to seduce Joseph, and he would not succumb to those advances. He refuses one particular attempt in which she grabbed his coat and he runs from the house. And she accuses him of all things. She accuses him of attempting to rape her. And Potiphar believes his wife. And Joseph is put into prison. And even in prison, he's given a very responsible position. While he's in prison, he interprets the dreams of two prisoners who had been assistants to Pharaoh. They had held some rather close positions to Pharaoh. And after being released from prison, one of these assistants is returned to Pharaoh's service. The other one is killed. But one of them returns to Pharaoh's service, and Pharaoh has a troubling dream. This is about 2 years later. Pharaoh has a very troubling dream. He does not understand the meaning of this dream. Well, this assistant to Pharaoh that had been in prison with Joseph remembers how Joseph had interpreted his dream, and so he tells Pharaoh about Joseph and what he had done. And so Pharaoh calls for Joseph, and Joseph comes and he interprets the dream. And the interpretation is that Egypt is about to have 7 years of abundance. The crops are going to grow and everything's going to be great. But those 7 years of abundance are going to be followed by 7 years of famine. And Joseph gives advice on how to handle this. Well, Pharaoh is so impressed by Joseph and the interpretation of the dream that Joseph is given a position in Egypt which really is second only to Pharaoh, a tremendous position Joseph now finds himself in. And this is just and Joseph now is about 30. So in the 13 years from the time that we met Joseph, take a look at the changes that have taken place in Joseph's life. So when the famine has come and it's had its impact upon Egypt, it also has its impact upon Jacob or Israel's family. And it's not just a localized thing in Egypt. It goes back for several nations around. And so when the famine hits up there where Jacob is, he sends 10 of his sons to Egypt to buy grain. Well, when these 10 boys go to Egypt to buy the grain, guess who they meet? Guess who is the guy who is in charge of dispensing the grain? It's their brother that they had sold. They didn't know who he was. They didn't recognize him. But Joseph recognizes who they are. Joseph, and here's where we cut through and leave out a lot of detail, but Joseph eventually reveals who he is to his brothers, and he has them go back home and to bring all of the family back from Canaan into Egypt, and that's how the Jewish nation gets started in Egypt. It was through all of this that had taken place in the life of Joseph. We'll talk more about this at the end of our study. But this is, that's a too brief, perhaps too superficial overlook at the life of Joseph. But anyway, if you don't know who Joseph is, maybe this will make you want to go back and take a look at more detail. All right, let's take a look now at some things in the life of Joseph, some very practical lessons that we can learn from the life of this young man, who we first meet him. He's a very young man. And I want to go to Ecclesiastes chapter 7 and verse 15 for just a moment. Because Ecclesiastes 7, and this is just one of many verses in the book of Ecclesiastes which deals with this subject. Solomon said, I have seen everything during my life of futility. There is a righteous man who perishes in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man who prolongs his life in his wickedness. Now this introduces us to a thing that is dealt with, as I said, quite frequently in the book of Ecclesiastes. It's a problem that Solomon had. And it was a problem that his daddy had, David. And his dad deals with it back in the 73rd Psalm. And that is that life is not fair. Bad, bad things happen to good, good people. And very good things happen to very bad people. And that's read from the beginning of Ecclesiastes to the end of Ecclesiastes. Solomon keeps coming back to that. And that's right. And sometimes by about the age of 10, we learn that lesson. Sometimes by the time we are in elementary school, things happen in our lives that make us realize this is not right. This is not fair. I'm a good person. Why has this happened to me? And at an early age, oftentimes we realize life's tough. And the second part of that, which is really not what we're going to talk about here in a minute, but the second part of that is life's tough and life's unfair, and you know what? Not a thing you're going to do to change it. You can enact all the laws you want to enact. You want to have all the protests and all of the sit-ins and the marches to try to correct all the unfairness in life. And guess what? If you live to be 120, your last breath will be with the realization of, hadn't changed a thing, life's still unfair. That's right. Well, at the ripe young age of 17, that came home to Joseph. When he was 17 years old, he was sold into slavery. And when he was not much older than that, maybe 18 or 19, we don't know, but wasn't too long after we're introduced to Joseph at 17, that he is falsely accused of sexual assault. And then he is imprisoned unjustly for all of that. Try to put yourself in Joseph's shoes at 17. Here are his brothers, his blood kin. And they hate him so much that they're willing to sell him and that they are willing to see him go off. And as far as they know, they'll never see him again, and they don't care. You think it went through Joseph's mind, this is not right. This is not fair. This is not good. What have I done? I'm sure those thoughts went through Joseph's mind. And then he gets down into Egypt, and here is this woman who continually tries to seduce him, and he's doing the honorable thing, and he's saying, no, I'm not going to do this. And she accuses him of sexual assault, and it's believed. And Joseph maybe is thinking, oh, here we go again. Man, my brothers sell me. They don't want anything to do with me. My master's wife has accused me of sexual assault, and her story is believed. And now I'm going to prison. Lord, I'm just 18 years old. Maybe 19, we don't know, but not much older than 17 when all of this happened. And yet, in all of the story that you read here, with life being so unfair and with life just kicking him in the gut and knocking him down, being sold into slavery, accused of a crime he didn't commit, going to prison, an absolutely innocent man, in none of this do you read anything about Joseph saying, why me, God? We don't know what was going through his mind. He may have had some of those, why me, God? I don't know, but that's not told here. I'd like to think that what you're seeing here is a 17, 18-year-old boy that's experiencing these things, and he's got his head up. He's got his head up. And he's not blaming God. In fact, as we're going to see, the very opposite. You're not blaming God for this. He's taking it like a man. That's tough to do when you're 57 or 67 or 77, but when you're 17, wow. Does that say something about the character of Joseph? It does to me. Something else about Joseph. This is from, I want to look at in Acts chapter 4. You may wonder what this has to do with Joseph's life. But Peter and John, this is when they were accused and being told not to preach anymore in the name of Jesus. But Peter and John answered and said to them, "Whether it is right in the sight of God to give heed to you rather than to God, you be the judge. For we cannot stop speaking about what we have seen and heard." Now the thing I want us to see here, there's several lessons from that. But one of them is, there are some times when we just have to speak up. We cannot remain silent. That we have to say what's on our mind. Conviction compels us to speak. And that's what Peter is saying here. You may tell us not to speak in the name of Jesus, but we can't help but say something about what we've seen and heard. Now, what does that have to do with the life and the character of Joseph? In chapter 37, where we're introduced to Joseph there when he's 17, a very simple statement made there about he brings an evil report concerning his brothers to his father. Now, I want you to go back to the sermon last week. We began the sermon last week talking about people who have been unfairly criticized in the Bible. And we talked about the innkeeper. We talked about others that have been unfairly criticized. Nicodemus. I want to add Joseph to that list for just a minute. Because everything I've read, and I'm sort of a contrarian, everything I've read about Joseph and this evil report, that Joseph was a tattletale, that he went to his father and just, about the brothers. Really? Is that anywhere in the text that Joseph was a tattletale? Could have been, but I don't think so. I want to give Joseph more credit than that. I want to give Joseph the credit for probably finding out that these brothers of his who were far removed geographically from the father could have been doing who knows what down there watching the flocks. And Joseph found out something about their character. Joseph found out something about some misconduct they were engaged in. That is just as plausible as saying Joseph was just a little tattletale, saying things about his brothers that were just insignificant. No. I think you have Joseph here, at least this is the position I'm going to take, that we have Joseph here finding out something that was missing in the character and in the lives of his brothers. Something that the father needed to know about. Information that he really needed to have. In that sense, there is nothing wrong with being a tattletale. When you know something of great significance that has to do with morality and character, and that needs to be told to someone, then be a tattletale. Tell it. Joseph had the courage to do it. Joseph knew his brothers didn't like him. They had made no secret of that. And I have all ideas that when Joseph decided to go back to his daddy and say whatever it was, this evil report was, he knew that probably it would get back to his brothers, and he knew that probably his brothers were not going to have a very pleasant response to that. He knew that. But I'm going to read this part of Joseph's life and put a positive spin on it and think, no, here you've got a man, a young man, 17-year-old boy, who found out something about his brothers of great significance. that the daddy needed to know about. And he took that report back to him, and willing to suffer whatever consequences he suffered, and he did. Obviously, he did. But that was part of Joseph's character, was to speak up. And if something wasn't right, if something was going on that wasn't the way it should be, it didn't matter who it was. Even if it was his brothers, Joseph was going to speak up about it and let people know who needed to know. And that's a great character trait to develop within ourselves. Look for a moment in Ecclesiastes again, chapter 9 and verse 10. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. For there is no activity or planning or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol where you're going. Remember, Ecclesiastes is a very practical book, like Proverbs. Very down to earth, very hands on. And here, the first part of this verse. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all of your might. A great work ethic. And it was a work ethic that Joseph had. To make the very best of the situation in which we find ourselves in. You be the very best at whatever it is that has been assigned to you. And when Joseph was put into Potiphar's house, there in chapter 39, he became not just a housekeeper, he became the best. Now, Joseph could have gone down there and felt sorry for himself and got all weepy and all sad and, I don't belong here, look where I am, and look what's got me down here, and yeah. He could have done that. But somebody, perhaps his daddy, had instilled in him a tremendous work ethic. Whatever job you are assigned to do, do the very best job you can. It may not be the greatest job in the world. It may not be your calling in life, what you're going to be doing till you're 65. But if it's the job you've got at the time, if it's sweeping floors, if it's cleaning bathrooms, if it's picking up trash outside, then you be the best floor sweeper, you be the best bathroom cleaner, you be the best trash picker-upper that ever lived. That's what Joseph did. Whatever his hand found to do, he did it, and he did his best at it. This kind of work ethic is... I hear this in talking to people. I've got a friend or two out in the workplace, and they tell me how unbelievably difficult it is to find young people. Not painting with a broad brush, but typically it's just hard to find young people that will hire on and be dependable, that will show up for work. They'll show up 2-3 hours late and then do a sloppy job when they get there. That wasn't Joseph. And that should not be the work ethic of any young person here who claims any kind of an allegiance to God through Jesus Christ. You do the very best at whatever job you're assigned. But then there is another one. 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 18. Flee from sexual immorality, or flee from fornication. Some versions have the word fornication there. And of course, this is one of the great things, one of the great stories in Joseph's life, that he maintained his moral integrity. And he remained sexually pure. I don't want to get graphic here, but I think we need to... Here is a 17, 18, maybe 19 at the most by the time he gets to Potiphar's house and all this happens. He's still a teenager. He's a normal young man, okay? He's at the height of normality. He's by himself. His family is long gone. Daddy's not watching over his shoulder. Ain't nobody down there checking up on him. He is alone in a house with probably a good-looking woman. And she's making advances. And perhaps doing like the woman of Proverbs 7, we won't get caught. We're not going to get caught. We can get away with this. Perhaps telling him like the woman of Proverbs 7, you're good looking. I want you. Don't worry. And over and over and over and over and over again, Joseph said no. And do you know the reason? Remember the reason that Joseph gave for not giving into this woman sexually? He said, how can I commit this great sin and sin against my God, not against my daddy? Daddy would have never known about it. How can I do this great sin and sin against God? Joseph was so concerned about his relationship with God, he said, I'm not going to sin sexually with you, even if we got away with it and nobody ever found out about it, God would know, and I can't do that. Young people, there is no excuse for giving in to sexual temptation. And whenever you think the urge is so strong, I just can't help myself. You remember Joseph, who could help himself, and he did overcome it repeatedly, even though it meant going to jail. A great practical lesson from the life of Joseph about maintaining sexual purity. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 32 comes to mind. Would you look at Joseph? Be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving each other, just as God in Christ also has forgiven you. Remember when Joseph revealed himself to his brothers, and his brothers were thinking, oh no, no, here's the guy that we sold, we did such bad things to, and now he is second in command in Egypt. Our heads will be severed from our necks. Then Joseph said to his brothers, please come closer to me. And they came closer, and he said, I'm your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. Now do not be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. Joseph said, forget it. We're not going to, the past is the past. And obviously, they were penitent. And this right here is perhaps, what Joseph did here is perhaps the most difficult thing you will ever be called upon to do, is to forgive somebody. It sounds easy. And we can all repeat the verses that teach it. But boy, when it comes time for the rubber to hit the road, so to speak, and you have to do it, that's tough. Big time tough. And one final thing about Joseph. And this is where Sharon comes in. Acts 18 and verse 21, Paul said to the Corinthians, I will return to you again if God wills. Paul recognized that the providence of God was active in his life. I'll return if God wills. Now, let's go back to the story of Joseph and pick up where we just left off with his brothers. There we go. Joseph relied on God's providence. Don't be angry at yourselves. Now notice, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing or harvesting. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth, and to keep you alive by a great deliverance. Now therefore, it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his household and ruler over all the land of Egypt. As for you, you meant evil against me, But God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result to preserve many people alive. Sharon told me when she asked me to do this stuff, on, she said, here's where the story of Joseph is relevant in my life. She said, here's how I'm looking at my move to China. God is working in my life. Okay. Yesterday morning, I talked with Sharon. We texted for a few minutes. Then she called me. She had gone for a job interview and in a town about 2 hours away from where her parents live. And she's got a pretty good line on the job, teaching English to high school students. And but that's just part of the... It gets gooder after that. She said Daryl had put her in touch with some people there in that town. And you want to guess how many Christians there are in this town where Sharon's going to find this job? About 1,000. About 1,000. It just so happened, yeah, that she met a preacher there yesterday. I'm getting my time kind of confused. Yesterday is today and tomorrow and whatever over there. But she met a preacher over there that is from Kentucky. He preaches in a congregation in Bowling Green where my cousin, one of my cousins and her husband attend. And he had heard of me through them. And she was feeling, and I texted her and I said, a lot of good things are happening in your life. And she texted back and said, God has called, I'm paraphrasing what she said, but she said, God has sent many good people into my life. That's why she wanted me to deal with the life of Joseph. She was looking at this move to China as something that God has sent me. But you don't have to move to China. You don't have to move to China for this to happen. You can move next door to somebody and God sent you and put you in that person's life. You can be on a job with somebody. You can just casually meet somebody and develop a friendship. How do you know that's not God putting you there and God putting them with you? How do you know that's not happening? A very, very mature way to look at life is how Sharon is looking at life in her move to China. How Joseph looked at his life in being sent down into Egypt. This is God. This is what God is doing, and I'm going to make the very best of it that I possibly can. Whether it's this point or any of those other characteristics that we find in the life of Joseph, I want to commend to you as highly as I can. You get better acquainted with the life of Joseph and you become the kind of character that Joseph was, and God will bless you just as He blessed Joseph. Thank you. We'll have the Lord's Supper at this time.